Our first session is James Stoffel. He literally wrote the book on wireless as the author of RF Coordination and Procedures Manual for the Olympics Committee. It's used as the blueprint for radio coordination at the Olympics Games. He found professional wireless systems, which continues to be among the top-end wireless audio providers in the country. James has worked as the frequency coordinator for many high-end special events like the World Cup, NBA All-Star and Final Games, Rose Bowl Games, and he continues on as a frequency coordinator for the Society of Broadcast Engineers. James has also worked as the wireless microphone and intercom operator on many of the large special events like Super Bowls, Grammy Awards, Billboard Music Awards, Video Music Awards, Soul Train Awards, and Country Music Awards. James is currently a founding member of the chief technology officer for Radioactive Designs, the newest wireless intercom manufacturer on the market. Please welcome James Stoffel.
Okay, thanks very much, everyone, for making it to this first morning meeting here. I did get my start with the Society of Broadcast Engineers as well, and built a pretty long and nice career out of it. Started with the World Cup, where I was a local coordinator in Central Florida. One of the World Cup games was there in 94, and then they realized they needed a national coordinator as well, so that just launched it all from there. So I want to start this morning off by making a fairly strong statement for all of us that have to work with wireless microphones and intercoms and make those work in the field, and IFBs as well. And I've made the statement many times before, first when digital television and analog were both energized simultaneously, it made our life very difficult as wireless microphone and intercom coordinators. And then with the 700 megahertz auction, we lost another third of this UHF spectrum. And the statement is that the next 3 to 4 years here in the United States will bring greater challenges to the wireless microphone and intercom operator than in any period in the history of man-made radio on the planet. And that's a pretty bold statement. And every time I've said it before, which there have been 3 or 4 times, it's been true. It's come to pass. It's really made our life as coordinators very difficult. Well, going forward now, we're faced with even greater challenges to the point where it's going to be just almost impossible to operate even a small number of wireless microphones or intercoms. This would include ENG, field shots, as well as studios and special events. So if we can go ahead and start. So I'm going to get off this slide because one Stoffel is enough to look at a time here. I'm going to kind of fly through a lot of this. Most of you probably know much of this information, and I want to leave enough time for questions as well as for the next presenter to get ready. So what you're looking at here pretty much is where all wireless microphones, intercoms, and IFB systems in the United States have operated since their introduction. As you guys well know, it was around the early 40s when TV became standardized, and it was 1962 when the first wireless microphones were used in the United States. It was a company called Vega Wireless. They're no longer around, but for you older guys, you might remember Vega Wireless. I worked at Vega when I got out of the Navy. I pretty much went straight to work for Vega as a field engineer. Back then, everything was VHF. Since then, we've seen a complete migration to UHF for wireless, what we call low-power auxiliary devices, microphones, intercoms, and in-ears and IFBs. So the first thing to happen was that the digital television energized. For a while, we had parallel analog and digital TV, made life pretty difficult for large events in particular, but even any wireless user. Back when I got into this industry, the broadcast industry, the way we would pick frequencies is we'd write a bunch of numbers on a dartboard and throw darts, and wherever they landed pretty much worked okay for us. Not going to be so easy going forward. What you see here in the purple and red on the bottom, that was a 700 megahertz auction. Wireless microphones have been used in that spectrum since the 70s or so. And then after the 700 megahertz auction, we lost one-third of the wireless frequencies that we always had since the 53 years. So that sort of made things a little bit more difficult because we were down to two-thirds of the UHF spectrum. And by this point, by the way, most of the wireless, if not all of the wireless, had migrated to UHF. So it really killed us down to about two-thirds of what we had since the introduction of wireless mics. Of course, we have this small period of time where we had parallel carriers of back-to-back analog and digital television, and so it became increasingly difficult to make large numbers of wireless microphones and intercoms work on any event. Thankfully, that's passed, and now we're down to just the digital television. So the new news now is, well, I'm sure you already know it's not that new anymore, but the FCC is allowing white space devices or TV band devices to energize in the United States. Now, these are radio consumer devices, much like a smartphone or a laptop, only they're authorized to transmit in the UHF television spectrum. This has already started, mostly in some of the more high-tech cities. I just was in Seattle. I work quite a bit with Microsoft R&D and do a lot on Microsoft campus. So you could imagine Seattle and that area would be the first to start lighting off white space, and absolutely has interfered with wireless microphone and intercom transmissions in that city. And they're legal to go national now. In fact, you can go online and buy white space fixed devices right now, which operate from 470 to 698 meg, right where the majority of wireless microphones and intercoms live in the United States right now. And that's why I recommend that you may want to start looking into these. They probably look familiar to many of you. This is a 6 meg cavity tuned filter. It's made by Microwave Filters. They're tunable across the band from 470 to over 800 meg. And with the spectrum analyzer, you could tune up a nice, tight 6 meg brick wall filter to protect your wireless microphones from white space device interference. Assuming you have a spectrum analyzer and a tracking generator, you can do it in about 30 seconds. Tune anywhere from 450 to the 698 currently. And I use these all the time on all of my live broadcast events now that white space devices are legal to operate. And of course, I don't have to go over with you guys what a filter does, but what we're looking at here is when you see what a white space device, like the consumer devices that could be on the retail market soon and are already on the market for more professional point-to-point links, they look like a mini DTV station. They take up just about 6 meg of spectrum. They're a digital package of RF, and the testing that I've done at Microsoft R&D proves that these devices will just flatten any analog or even digital wireless microphone or comm system that they interfere with. So you'll want to protect those. There are a few ways to protect them. I'll go over all of those today. But of course, using the 6 meg cavity filter is just going to offer some additional protection. So a quick little review here. Just in the last few years, and this is why I made the statement that the next few years will present greater challenges than any time in the history of man-made radio on Earth. We've gone through it a few times. 2010, as you all know, was a 700 meg release, and we had to discontinue use of any wireless microphones or intercoms above 698 meg. Most of the manufacturers offered some type of a trade-in or to realign, retune your systems to a legal spectrum. But now, at this point, it is not legal to operate any wireless mics above 698, so that we lost about a third of our radio spectrum at that point. And in fact, when I work as a free coordinator and I have a check-in desk where ENG crews and so forth that don't pre-coordinate in advance, that's the first time I get to see those folks is when they run in. If they have a system over 698 meg and it can't tune below, well, legally they're not allowed to use that system. And I've mentioned that to people, and they go ahead and use it anyway, of course, right, once they're in. And the result is that literally they can take out the entire Verizon or Sprint cell phone network. It's happened to me twice, once on an NBA All-Stars where it took down the Verizon network and 50-something thousand subscribers lost coverage and couldn't communicate at the game that day, and again at a Rose Bowl where it was a Sprint situation. where the interference took down Sprint. So it's big consequences. It used to be the only people you'd see running around with spectrum analyzers and directional antennas were the freak coordinators or broadcast engineers. Now I'm starting to see cell phone companies running around with spectrum analyzers and 700 meg Yagis trying to find the wireless mics that are taking down their network. So when they do that, I just shake their hand and I say, welcome to the 700 meg spectrum. Of course, we also have the introduction of white space devices. It hasn't happened on MOS yet, but it certainly will over the next 2 to 3 years. In addition to working with Microsoft's R&D, I work as the A2 and the RF coordinator for all of their special events, their corporate meetings. And they absolutely are planning on large-scale white space release over the next year or two, and probably within 2 years, consumer portable devices, which means cell phones, which means that your audience, including us and the people back behind the camera, will also have devices on their hip that could potentially interfere with wireless microphones if you don't go through your proper protective steps, which we'll go over here. So what does all this mean? This means that within two years or so, we'll be down to about 10% of the UHF spectrum that we've had for wireless mics and comms since 1962. Now, it's certainly not too late to plan, and I'm going to give you plenty of places to go, but I would say at this point, it's probably not the best idea to purchase any wireless audio equipment above 600 meg. And incidentally, I'll be back sitting in the audience for the 11 o'clock session with Jay Attrick. He'll be talking about the TV spectrum repacking. And I'm not going to get into that in great detail, but Jay will. So I want to sit in and hear what he has to say. What I'm touching on is the effect of this repack on wireless audio devices like microphones. And that relates to the 600 meg auction that you see there, scheduled for the first quarter of next year, and Jay will tighten up the dates for you. After that point, we'll be down to less than 5% of the UHF spectrum that we've had for over 50 years. And most of you guys look like you've been around long enough to remember when all of the microphones and comms were VHF, and it was wide open down in VHF back then, and UHF was wide open. And as VHF filled up with the old Vega microphones and the Electrosonics and Telex and that sort of thing, people opened up UHF. Around 1990, 1992, Sennheiser and everybody started coming out with UHF microphones. And so now we've seen this complete reversal where UHF is practically unusable and VHF is wide open. So here again, this is just a news release from the FCC on the spectrum incentive auction and repacking. And I'm not going to get into great detail because of time and because Jay will get into all this in greater detail at the 11 o'clock session in this very room. In fact, this also has to do with the repack, but as it affects wireless microphones, I'll address that. Originally, the FCC had said that they will give us, and that's the two green lines up there, which you're looking at, obviously, are television channels of 6 meg each, TV 37, search for extraterrestrial intelligence, or radio astronomy. The FCC had originally said, well, since we're taking away and auctioning off so much of the UHF spectrum, we're going to give you, the broadcast community, the 12 meg, 6 above and 6 below TV 37 to continue to operate in some manner for your wireless mics. Well, they've taken that away. That's no longer the case. So we've lost that piece of spectrum. So as this auction happens, and again, Jay will get into greater detail, and television begins to repack, wireless microphones will have to vacate the UHF spectrum above 600 meg, which means that all of the stuff in your studio and all of your field ENG wireless will need to move down below 600 meg. And this is happening pretty quick, so you really want to be thinking about this. Again, if you're in charge of budgets and so forth, you really need to know this. And what you see is up there between the uplink and the downlink, way up above the 600 meg mark there, above TV 37, there's a small little plex gap. It could be between 4 meg and 11 meg. If you have a Part 74 license, which I'm sure all of you do, you'll be allowed to operate some wireless mics in that little sliver. Also, they're looking at opening up TV-37. So apparently we found the extraterrestrials. There's no more reason to search for them, and so they're giving us TV-37 back. And they've changed frequencies, apparently, because it's okay now. So here's just a quick little review of the 20 years, from 20 years ago to what we think we'll see here, well, what we know we're going to see at this point next year. And what you're looking at is the green bars are analog television, the gray bars are digital television. And the narrow spikes are wireless microphones, wireless intercoms, and wireless IFB. And as you can see, back about, it was not even 20 years ago, it was just even 10 years ago, there was a ton of room out there to operate multiple wireless microphones. I saw Lou Libin is going to be here speaking later on today. Lou, is that you? Hey, Lou. So Lou works as a large event frequency coordinator on the conventions, the political conventions and large events. And there were literally hundreds, if not thousands, of wireless microphones and intercoms and other low-power devices on these events. So about 10 years ago, it was already difficult, don't get me wrong, but it's only going to become more and more difficult as we go through the next couple of years. In fact, I don't know how Lou and guys like Carl Voss that coordinates the Super Bowl and large events like this, it's going to be extremely difficult. I'm sure we'll have to limit the number of wireless that news reporters could bring to these large events, maybe even limit the type of equipment that could be brought into these events because there's no room left. You can only pack so many frequencies into a given space. So as you can see, after the parallel carriers of digital television and analog, that's the second line down, kind of squeezed us a little bit. There's a little bit less space to place wireless microphones. And then the 700 megahertz auction took effect back in 2010, and everything above 700 meg had to repack down below 700 meg. We also lost most of the analog carriers at that point. However, if you notice here, there's already still a lot less room to place low-power auxiliary devices like microphones and intercoms. And of course, after March of 2016, just a couple of months from now, we'll lose yet another 100 meg, just about, potentially, of spectrum, which means if we wish to remain in the UHF spectrum for wireless mics and comms, we'll have even less space to do so, which means even less systems will be able to function properly within that remaining space. So that's all the bad news. So what do we do? What's the good news, and where can we go, and how, as an industry, do we respond? First off, let me address the white space device introduction, because that last slide that you just saw had only to do with television and auctions, and in addition to the other small little lines of low-power devices, that's exactly where the white space devices will operate. If you're not a Part 74 holder, you really will have no rights at all, no priority over these consumer devices. And on a large event, there could be hundreds, if not thousands, of such devices right in the audience, interfering in the same radio spectrum as your wireless mics and intercoms. And no one really knows how this is going to completely pan out, because we all deal with very high precision, high tech radio electronics. Consumer devices do not fit that description. Most of the time when I have to address a problem with interference on a large event, it is a consumer related device, such as a cell phone repeater within the building that's splattering out of band and shuts down the game clock at the NBA game or something like this. So these will be consumer digital devices. However, for our own protection as Part 74 holders, there is a geolocation database. There are several white space database administrators, and all you really need to do, or what the frequency coordinator would do, or you, if it's your own network, your own studio, is you go into this database and you can literally reserve your wireless microphone and intercom frequencies in the database, and it will protect it from these white space devices. So in other words, it's an over-the-air program, just like cell phones. When you drive from city to city, it switches the radio in your cell phone. The same thing will be with these white space devices. You register your list of frequencies with the database, and theoretically, it's supposed to keep all of the white space devices off of your wireless microphones. There are four authorized white space database administrators. There's a total of 11 that have applied. I would assume that at some point we'll see the others on this list. However, these are the four right now. I have already begun to register all of my events, all of my shows, even corporate theater with my Part 74 license into the database. I use KeyBridge. That's why I put KeyBridge at the top, because they are very sympathetic to the broadcast community. The president of the company, Jesse Coalfield, has been working with broadcasters. We've met at multiple NAB conferences in Vegas, and he's made it very clear that he wants to support us as broadcasters and the production community. They all work for the white space community, obviously, but Jesse and KeyBridge is my personal favorite because of his sympathetic feelings towards the broadcasters. So we're losing a lot of spectrum, and you may even a small number of wireless microphones, it may be very difficult to get to operate successfully. So if you're planning purchases of equipment for yourself, there are a few things that you should be looking at, because times have changed. Back, as I say, when we were dealing with VHF, in fact, when I first started in the broadcast industry, all of the wireless mics and comms were crystal controlled. There was no frequency selection process. To change a frequency, you had to desolder a crystal, burn a new crystal in for a couple of days, solder it back into the unit, and tune the unit. It took a week to change a frequency. So that's why when I'm on an event now, and I ask one of the audio assistants to change a couple of frequencies on IFBs, and they give me a hard time because they have to open up a button and resync this infrared in about a half a second, I give them my whole story about how many crystals I had to desolder and tune up. So just go ahead and hold the receiver in front of your transmitter and change that frequency in your 10 seconds and you'll be done with it. But you should be looking at equipment that obviously can tune outside of the 600 to 698 meg band. You should be looking for equipment that has a wide tuning range so that if you need to move around or if something fires up, you can work around it. For those of you that are doing remote production, you'll obviously have to do some more frequency coordination in advance and register those frequencies for that geolocation in the white space database. Now, this goes all beyond the level of coordination that we already do. We already have frequency coordinators. The SBE is great with frequency coordination. We all work with each other on large events. But this is in addition to all of that. You will have to register in the databases. Okay, I've just put this up because there are other sources of interference onto wireless microphones and comms, and since we have a shrinking spectrum, we'll want to make sure that all of the devices out there that are within the remaining spectrum that we have left are not the cause of our renegade interference and lighting and digital walls and other devices which are used in production do, in fact, create harmful interference onto wireless microphones. So there are a few ways to get around that. One is to, obviously, if you have long shots, you have to try to get your transmitters, your receiver antennas as close to your talent, your host as possible. In this case, what we're looking at is the national anthem at one of the Super Bowls. That's Carrie Underwood. And that's my daughter right there. She's really very short, but she's halfway out on the field because the point was to increase my signal-to-noise ratio because we were getting dropouts on that mic about 20 seconds before we went to air. So I handed my kid a helical antenna, and I said, look through the back of that helical and point it right at Carrie and run out on the field until you run out of cable. And that's what she did. So we got through that one by the skin of our teeth, as most live broadcasts happen. So the trick is get your antennas as close as possible to your hosts in a large show throw like that, if it's a large throw. Another thing people don't think about are the intermods that happen just by laying transmitters down next to each other on a table. Even two or three wireless microphones sitting on a table next to each other can create all kinds of interference. So you can go out, right? You can go out for $3 and you can get a dozen metal trays from Walmart or whatever your market of choice is. These are a little more Gucci because we use them so often on large events. And just to give you an example, here is two traces. The bold trace is the transmitters inside of a metal tray, and the not so bold is what it would look, what the RF spectrum looks like when you pull the same transmitters out of that metal tray. Now bear in mind that there's all types of intermod distortion happening there that could end up stepping on your very comms, which would be could potentially be life safety comms if it's moving set pieces around and stage managers and that type of thing. Obviously, different types of carriers have a different footprint. We want to start to minimize our spectral footprint. That's the only way that we're going to be able to get the same number of wireless microphones and intercoms operating in less spectrum is to use as narrow band equipment as possible. I wanted to put this up though to give you an idea. These are wireless microphones. The one on the on your right is a Shure ULXD digital wireless mic. It takes up about 200 kilohertz. However, I can tell you after lots and lots of testing that digital wireless microphones are much more tolerant to the type of interference that we're going to be faced with very shortly than their FM counterparts. I've done a lot of testing with white space devices onto analog and digital wireless mics, and this stuff is right around the corner, so you really need to know this. The digital mics just seem to be a lot more tolerant because they're spread in nature, and it takes a much greater signal to interfere with these microphones. The result is, however, if you're wondering, when the FM signal gets any interference whatsoever, it is completely unusable, as you most of you probably know. With a digital signal, it's not unusable. It actually has great digital audio quality. You just lose a little bit of range. And in my testing, I found that you only lose about 15 to 20% of the range. Whereas with any analog system, it'll just be completely unusable. Of course, you know the difference between frequency and amplitude modulation. However, just know that when we're talking about spectral efficiency, which is the absolute goal that we need to think about going forward. In fact, I spoke at a sports video group conference in New York at least 10 years ago. And at that point, I challenged all of the manufacturers. Everybody was there, Sennheiser, Shure, Telex, Audio Technica, Electrosonics, and I challenged those manufacturers back then to begin to manufacture more spectrally efficient technology just to prepare for the time that we are in right now. Unfortunately, no one came through with that, and they all sort of said, well, it's more difficult than it sounds. So now we still have systems out there that need 300 to 400 kilohertz to operate in, and that's just simply too much. One approach is to look at amplitude modulation, believe it or not. And that's what we've done with communication systems because, of course, you're not going to get as good an audio quality out of a 20 kilohertz signal as you would out of a 400 kilohertz signal. But for comms, it's good. It's certainly good enough. And you can pack anywhere from 12 to 30 times the amount of belt packs into the same spectrum as one FM system. So the trade-off is spectral efficiency. As long as it's not ACSB, that's good. So this is a double sideband suppressed carrier, 20K separation, pilot tones. So this is a radio spectrum band plan that's based on equipment that's either available right now or that I know wireless microphone and intercom manufacturers are working on. This is sort of what our world will look like after March of next year, after the spectral repacking, and after any auctions that take place above 600 megahertz. We now know that VHF works just fine. In fact, the FCC has expanded VHF. They've expanded the rules into VHF. They're allowing us more power. Before, we were limited to 50 milliwatts, and they're giving us potentially up to a quarter watt, not that you would need that. They're also opening up some frequencies for Part 74 users. In VHF, they're opening 169 to 172, it looks like, and in that spectrum, you can pack probably 50 wireless intercoms if you're using amplitude modulation. Of course, we already have 72 to 88 meg. You have your Comtech IFBs. If you're in need of using wireless IFBs, I would recommend looking down in the low band VHF. And of course, high band 174 to 216. Currently, Radioactive Designs is manufacturing equipment there for wireless comms. And I can assure you that before NAB next year, which is the month after the auction, it's in April, by that time, you will see at least a half a dozen wireless mic manufacturers with VHF products on the market. So somebody had to sort of be the first, and then everybody realized, hey, there was really nothing wrong with VHF. Let's go back down there. So we'll see all of the top manufacturers introducing wireless products down in the VHF band. This spectrum band plan, I'll just fly through it really quickly because I'm already just about out of time. The purpose is, the whole idea of the spectrum band plan is if we have less space to operate the same number of wireless systems, we need to be much more spectrally efficient. We need to limit the RF noise and interference onto our own equipment. So if you have wireless IFBs, you clearly would want to keep those separated from your wireless microphones by some guard band. In this case, I'm using 10 meg. If you look between 555 is where I put my IFBs and wireless intercom base stations, and then I gave myself a 10 meg guard band before I started my first wireless microphone, because there will be splatter outside of most combiner systems, and that would desense the receivers for the wireless mics looking for microvolts of energy. 902 to 928, Shure has already introduced a ULXD digital wireless microphone there. So there's a place to look if the frequency coordinator is going to allow audio devices to operate there. But it's certainly free from white space devices, and it's free from the 600 meg auction and spectral packing. The 944 to 952, we've traditionally known that as an STL band, a studio transmitter link band. However, it is completely legal to operate wireless mics there. And in fact, just since when I submitted this PowerPoint, this 944 to 952 has been expanded to go all the way down to 941 and potentially all the way up to 960. So you can place a lot of wireless microphones in that just about 20 megahertz of spectrum. There are already devices at 1.4 gig out there that could be used if there's nowhere else to go. These devices need to be coordinated with AVTRAC, and we share with the aerospace community on a coordinated basis. And of course, we can go up above a gig to 1.9 and up to 2.4 gig. There are devices on the market in those spectra as well. However, they're shared with other consumer devices like Wi-Fi, cell phones, and are not generally on a coordinated basis. So it's a scorched earth approach. However, it is certainly available to you. Don't need to talk about intermod distortion. You guys all know what that is, obviously. But it would be time to start looking at some type of intermod software to do any large event that involves more than a few wireless mics, because you're cramming more and more frequencies into a smaller and smaller spectrum, and so the frequencies need to be coordinated properly. There are three or four companies out there that sell or give away for free intermod analysis software. Shure has a wireless workbench. Sennheiser has a turbo program. This happens to be from Professional Wireless. They all do the same thing. They're number crunchers, just something that you need to be aware of going forward, you're going to require some type of Intermod analysis software. So again, just I'm gonna pretty much end it really soon here and take questions if any. However, this is where we start to talk about all of the various equipment from the manufacturers. Again, you're gonna see equipment in the VHF band from all of the major wireless mic manufacturers, Sennheiser, Shure, Electrosonics, Comtech, and Radioactive Designs for wireless intercom systems. Also into the other bands as well. We think the FCC is going to give us enough time to do the R&D required to come out with quality wireless microphones and intercoms going forward. Some of it's already available, some of it's soon to be available. I think at this point, do we have some microphones for questions? They're out in the audience. Any questions from anybody on the spectrum auctions, past, future, where we're going, wireless coordination, microphones, all wireless audio? Yes, back we have a question there.
Do the digital mics have any delay?
Yes, the question is, do the digital RF mics have delay? Anytime you have digital technology, you convert from analog to digital and back to analog, there will be a delay. Most of the microphone manufacturers that produce digital wireless mics are also catering to the entertainment community, which means that their microphone is going to a mixing console and probably back out onto some wireless in-ears to the artist on stage. Sennheiser has a digital 9000 unit, Shure has a ULXD, AKG makes a digital 700 unit, and all of these devices have less than 2 milliseconds of delay. I think Shure quotes 1 millisecond, and I've used all of these products on multiple large events, and I've never had anyone, even artists who are listening back in their own ear to their own voice, I've never had anyone complain about any delay because of the digital nature of the mic. In fact, it takes about 5 or 6 milliseconds before the average person could even perceive a delay, and generally upwards of 10 milliseconds. So when you're down in the 1 to 4 millisecond delay category, you're doing really well. Anybody else? Questions? Yes, Lewis.
James, just a comment, just so that people don't think that James is up there talking about something that will be developed. In the past couple weeks, I've seen your system in operation twice, VHF, and it's what a pleasure to work with.
Thanks. I'm trying not to plug it too much. This is more of a technical discussion, but thank you, Lou. Yes, we came out with our VHF products the beginning of the year, and they've been used on pretty much every large broadcast event this year, and we continue to improve it. It's a software-defined radio, so we improve it as people give us suggestions. So I'm going to put up my email if anyone needs to get a hold of me. Oh, one more thing, in case you may have forgotten, cable loss in VHF is a lot better than UHF. In fact, you can run a cable, an RF cable, probably 3 times the length at UHF and have equivalent loss to UHF. And there's me, Radioactive Designs. If you would like any more information on the VHF comms or the upcoming auctions, white space devices, there's some good technical information on radioactive.com, and that's my email down at the bottom, radioactive@radioactive.com. And if there are no more questions, I thank you very much for your time and enjoy the rest of the session today. Thanks.